Welcome to the Ortho Joe Podcast, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. Join hosts Mohit Bhandari and Mark Swankowski as they discuss current topics and publications in the world of orthopedics and beyond.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I've got my
I don't have my cup, but I have my coffee. So, and it's red, so it's not totally off brand.
Well, that's true. I got mine.
Lovely.
I'm ready to go.
Lovely.
Actually, you'll be impressed.
Yes.
Because I had a Tim Hortons thing for the Keurig this morning.
Oh.
So I got my Tim Hortons.
Yes. That's right. I will drive. I will pass a Starbucks. I'll just keep going. I'll just look for that Tim Hortons. So that's what I did this morning. But listen, we can talk coffee all morning, and we do for a lot. But why don't we introduce our impressive guests today? And I know you've got lots to say.
Well, I don't have lots to say. I hope to draw out a few questions, a few opinions and thoughts from my esteemed colleague, Dr. Mac Everts, who did his residency at the University of Rochester, then was in the Navy, then went to the Cleveland Clinic in 1964, up through the ranks, met and helped to educate a young resident named Ken DeHaven, I believe, at that place, and became the chairman. Then he moved to Penn State, where he was the senior vice president and dean from 1987 to 2000. So that's one of the questions is, why would an orthopedic surgeon ever want to be dean of a medical school? But then back to Rochester, where he was the CEO and senior vice president for the health system. The Mac was the AOA president in 1985 and continues to this day to model leadership throughout the entire organization. He's been the president of the HIP Society of the American Board of Orthopedic Surgery, ran the Omega Grants Program, is a member of the Institute of Medicine, which is a very rare thing in the United States to have an orthopedic surgeon in that august body. But the most important thing is his former trainees have, in 8 occasions, gone on to chair departments. First of all, Mac, did I get the biography correct?
Not bad. You skipped. When I left the Cleveland Clinic, I went back to Rochester because they decided to form a department of orthopedics. It was a division of surgery. So in 1974, they said they would form a department of orthopedic surgery. And so I went as chair of orthopedics there till 87. And that's when I went to Penn State as the dean. So I had that 13-year career at the University of Rochester.
Right. Well, I knew I was going to get something wrong because there's just so much that you've done that it's pretty easy to get an element wrong. You have to this day an incredible reserve of energy and drive, and you're an inspiration to anybody that knows you. And I know it's painful to you because I know you well enough to know you don't toot your own horn at any occasion. But what the heck? I mean, how have you encouraged and supported so many people? You know, Sebastianelli, Black, I could go on and on. So talk a little bit about what's the deal? What's the secret sauce?
I think it has something to do with the history and how it unfolded. I think one of the questions you started out with early on was to say, why in the world would I become a dean if I was a chair of orthopedics? I mean, what in the world would possess anybody to do that? And clearly, I think it has to do with the fact that you have a great pride in orthopedics. You have a great pride in being an orthopedic surgeon and having a good department. And so you want to say, I need to have a little bit more to say about what's going on in an institution. How can I influence an institution? What would be the opportunity to make some changes? Mm-hmm. And so at the University of Rochester, I was the chair, and we were pretty successful there. And these are where all these residents came from, all of us nine. Almost all the nine, except Ken DeHaven and John Bergfeld, came from Rochester. They went on to be chairs and AOA presidents and so on. But the question was, how in the world could I influence any? Could I make more of an influence? And so there was always the opportunity, if you looked at the governance of an institution, to say, well, you know, I could probably influence the education. And so one of the first things I did at Penn State was to say, we're going to start problem-based learning. Well, I thought they were going to run me out of town. I thought the basic scientists were going to put me on a rail and tar and feather me, because they thought that was the dumbest thing they ever heard of. So, but we still got it through. And then you had the opportunity in the dean and CEO's role to really move the research ahead. We created a postdoctoral program and so on. So those are the things that you could do. I think it just was sort of expanded. I had sort of, I don't know, I had gotten through the leadership in orthopedics as a departmental chair. And I thought, well, maybe there's more to it than this. And I wanted to establish orthopedics as the center of an academic health center. So I've always worked hard on that. Made a lot of people nervous. On the other hand, it's worked out sort of okay some of the time.
Yeah, well, Mac, your humility comes through in spades. And Dr. Bhandari is keen to continue to learn about leadership. He'll have the next question. But let me just ask before I turn it over to him. Did you find your time in the organization above the department level as rewarding as your time as a leader in the Department of Orthopedic Surgery?
Well, one of the things you posed here when you sent me your original email was, how did I manage to stay in the position? What was my secret of longevity? And I think that circles around, you know, everybody knows this. I mean, I surrounded myself with some unbelievably capable individuals. So you created a leadership team that was unmatched in certain ways. And it's wonderful as a leader because they do all the work and you get all the credit. So you emerge as somebody that's created this thing. And so as a dean and CEO, you had to have strong convictions. I mean, you had to be able to negotiate. You had to learn how to negotiate. You had to be persistent. I kept coming back on certain things. I think there's an old adage it's called talent without perseverance is barren. So basically, if you don't persevere, you're going to lose the things that you're trying to accomplish. And I suppose if there is any secret of longevity, it would be, it was absolutely critical to have a relationship with the president of the university. And I worked very hard at that. I mean, it wasn't false. It was a true relationship. And before I took the position, I really met with the president a few times just to make sure that we might see the things in the same way, or that he was interested in having an academic institution that was on the growth pattern, not on the hold pattern. So yeah. I don't know. But that relationship is critical.
When you look back at all the different things that have happened in your career, and I guess you, as you humbly, as Mark said, you're quite humble about all the successes you've had. Was there any, did you have any sense of, okay, my next 5 years, this is what I'm going to do? Or were there a series of doors that were opened? You just walked through them? Were there a series of just circumstances that, you know, where you weren't planning on moving in that direction, but you did? People always wonder. Yeah.
There are a couple of textbooks about accidental presidents. Maybe you've read that. Sure. You know, about Truman. I mean, you can go back in time. And so here I was at the Cleveland Clinic, a junior faculty member, and there were several senior faculty members. And all of a sudden I get this letter saying, well, you're the next chair. And I thought, what in hell is going on here? I mean, I had, there was no application process. There was nothing. And so talk about an accidental thing. And of course, one of the senior faculty members at Cleveland Clinic quit on the basis of that, because he thought he was going to be the new chair. So that started it. And in a sense, then we were very fortunate to have some. And Dick Burton was another person that I had that worked with me. And I brought Dick and Kendi Avent to Rochester with me. So there I was. I came arrived at Rochester with this two very talented individuals. One became the president of the Hand Society, and the other became the president of the Academy. Yeah. And so they were on the faculty. So, you know, we had this team that sort of swept through a little bit. I don't know if that answers your question. No. There's no question that it was accidental. The same thing happened at Rochester. I left Penn State because I'd been dean for 14 years or 13 there or whatever. I thought I'd better get out of town and get ahead of the posse. I mean, so I decided I was going to the hell out and go back to Rochester, which is my academic home, really. And so I'm there for a month or two in graduation in the robing room for the speaker graduation, who I knew. And somebody tapped me on the shoulder, turned around, it's the president of the university. He said, you got to help me. And I said, oh, yes, sir, or whatever. Come over in the corner. And I went over in the corner. He said, we fired the CEO last night. And the first words out of my mouth was, I'm too old. But anyways, so that was how that started. So you talk about falling into something or falling out of something or whatever. That's the way that came about. So they had a search committee and they were desperate. And so they didn't have any other choice, whatever.
So. Well, I imagine you were always the right choice, but when you got into these roles, let's say for your, you know, from your opinion saying, well, I wasn't planning on it, but it was a role I took. How did you inspire yourself to do what you did in each of those roles? What did you have to figure out in yourself to be able to move forward? You talked a lot about the idea of grit and, you know, despite talent, you've got to persevere. What was the inspiration for you? Mm-hmm.
I think basically, you know, you're an orthopedic surgeon. I mean, you work hard. You're used to working hard. You're used to producing. You're used to having cases that are challenging. So that wasn't a frightening thing necessarily. I mean, it was something that had to be done. So we sort of decided to get it done. The difficult problems were dealing with personality sometimes. We were trying to do some mergers and they were difficult, and things like that took a lot of negotiating and persistence. Why I could do that seemed like a challenge to me. I was a pseudo athlete in high school and college, and so I always liked to win. I didn't disguise that very much. Anyways. Yeah, I'm not sure I'm answering that very well.
No, I appreciate that.
It's just, there was a drive. I think somewhat goes back to your family. My mother was a matriarch. She ran the show. She, in the 40s, was the head of athletic medicine in a large central high school in New York State, which was unusual for a woman. And there were... my father worked in a steel mill, and so he couldn't watch the games because if they were during the day, he was working. So she put lights on the football field, the first lights that ever appeared on our football field in a small high school. So that was the kind of background that, you know, she really expected you to perform. That was all there was to it. I could remember my sons were playing, and one son had a great day playing football. He, you know, ran for several yards and so on. After the game, she said, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. So that was whatever. There was something that came down the road, I guess. Influenced me a little bit, I guess. I don't know. It's
toughness inherited to some degree. Yeah,
that was no question. There was no sympathy. If you got hurt, it was your own damn fault. And so there was no sympathy.
Well, Mac, I got one more question for you. And then Mo, I'm sure we'll have one more and then close us out. But many individuals who have been in important leadership roles in our field have at some point just kind of ridden off into the sunset and retired to play golf or do whatever their hobby is, and have sort of stepped back from the field. But that hasn't been your style and what you've done. You have had a major continuing leadership role in the academy 30 plus years after you were the president, as an example. And I know you've been involved in institutional leadership issues as well. And so what's that about? Is it rewarding to you? Is it a sense of duty? Is it your hobby? Or
people say, oh, they get a hobby, some people.
Yeah.
Why don't you get out of here and get a hobby? Mm-hmm. Well, I think it goes back to the fact that I have a certain pride in being an orthopedic surgeon, and I want to see orthopedics continue to show leadership in the institutions that they're part of. And so to stay involved on a national level was relatively not easy, but it was certainly something I just felt, well, if I could do something, it could contribute, I'd do it. And so that's where this fundraising came in, you know, for the AOA. I mean, that at the beginning, it was supposed to be a 3-year thing, and it turned out to be agonizingly long because of the. But I mean, in a sense, I had had to fundraise as a CEO, so it wasn't something that I had to do. I mean, you had to do that. So the AOA was something that we were pretty successful in getting that done, and it was rewarding for me to see some of my former residents move to be president of the AOA. I think there's 7 of them now.
Yeah.
And I keep comparing it to other institutions and pointing out that we're way ahead of them for numbers. I like that part. But I guess it's just something that I enjoy what I'm doing now, which is interacting with first and second year medical students and interviewing for medical student applicants. So, you know, I do that, and I don't know much, but I have a lot of stories that I tell the students. So we have a lot of fun in class.
You know a lot, and you're an inspiration, I'm sure, continuing to these young potential physicians even today. And I want to just thank you for everything you've done for our specialty. Mo, it's all you.
Listen, I mean, I could keep listening. I could keep listening for hours and hours, because there's a lot of wisdom in your words. And I can tell you, from just on a personal note, the journal, the JBJS is, you know, has been a new role for me, and Mark has been exceptionally kind to help me move through it. So I take great comfort in hearing about sort of your own stories. But the journal did start one thing. Maybe I'll leave with this last question, which the journal started a section that I thought was a very important one called, you know, the arts and humanities, talking about how surgeons and leaders need in some ways to have time to do things to, you know, wherever, you know, rejuvenate, re-energize, to get good ideas. Interestingly enough, Nature Medicine just put out a fairly strong note saying that, you know, scientists and leaders need time to think. And I wonder your perception on just how important having a little bit of time to yourself to think and strategize or put things together, whatever that may be, has been for you in your life.
No, I think there's something to that. I didn't sleep much. Maybe I mean, I don't know. I didn't require a lot of sleep. So You know, Mark may remember that terribly heavy 5-volume textbook. Well, how do you think that damn thing got written? It was in the middle of the night. And so I think that I always took a little time every night to sit down and sort of think about what happened that day and what was going to happen the next day. One of the leadership things that I didn't mention was, and this has been carried out by a couple former dean at Rochester, who became the CEO at the University of Florida, and he copied it, or didn't copy, but did the same thing. I used to have a 7 o'clock meeting for the leadership team at the Med Center every day, except Sunday. And they grumbled and moaned about it, that, but that was something that we could, and it had the CEO, the hospital director, the dean, and the PR person, and others. And we would say, what went wrong yesterday? What are we going to do today? What's going to happen tomorrow? What are our plans for the future? When do we bring the president in? When do we bring the chair of the board in? And it worked out really well because we kept track of everything going on. So that was a moment of reflection, in a sense, for us. Now, as far as personal time, I was always involved. My boys were athletes, both in high school and college. And so I would go to their games. I mean, I sometimes would go from the hospital and then come back to the hospital and after the games and stuff. So I don't know. Well, that, I guess if you don't sleep a lot, you do have time to do that.
Yeah. Well, and especially if you're awake when everyone else is asleep, you've got a lot of alone time.
That's right. No, that's true. I mean, that was quiet time at night. I mean, there was, you know,
right,
quiet down. So it was pretty good that way.
Well, listen, thank you so much for taking time out of your very, 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 very busy day, too. I'm sure you've got lots on the go. Mark, thank you again for helping us work through another exceptional conversation. Dr. Everts, thank you so much. We wish you all the best.
I'm privileged to whatever.
Well, thank you again.
Yeah, look forward to reading the next issue.
Lovely. Until that time, take care, everybody. Okay.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Mac.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mark. Take care. Bye.